Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Peter Henderson, who is the manager of the Bookshelf Cinema. Now, it would be unfair to say that independent art house movie theaters like the Bookshelf are feeling the biggest impact from the COVID-19 lockdown, but things weren't exactly easy for them before the outbreak either. From the fewer number of films being released theatrically to big monopolies at the studios and national theater chains to the growing number of streaming options, indie cinemas have had a lot to deal with before a situation arose where they were barred from screening movies at all. But is it a lost cause? Is there hope at the end of the quarantine even for our seemingly forgotten art house theaters? Going to the movies is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. We've been quarantined for about a month now, but the battle for independent theaters to stay open, and even marginally profitable, has been a struggle that's unfolded for years. Consider the near unlimited amount of content you can access in your home now from Netflix, Crave, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, and so many more. It was already tough to get up off the couch and get into a movie theater seat that might cost you $15 or more. And then the big chain theaters have the advantage of first dibs on big movies from big studios, not to mention the leverage of being able to negotiate across dozens of cinemas and hundreds of screens versus one theater at a time. When you consider these massive challenges, it's a wonder that so many indie theaters are still standing at all. Perhaps in Guelph that's not so strange because of the incredibly strong and dedicated community that the Bookshelf has fostered over 30 years in the downtown core. Of course, COVID-19 came at a time when life at the Bookshelf was on an upswing after the disruption of renovations that included an elevator to the second floor and a new front of house at the cinema that had just been completed and was now offering a variety of new treats through the green room, including beer and spirits. Sure, there was that weird thing where they couldn't screen Knives Out or Little Women as scheduled because they were still being screened at the local big box theater, but these challenges are just par for the course for indie movie theaters. Now the chains are hurting too. The largest cinema chain in the United States could be hemorrhaging on bankruptcy if business analysts are to be believed, and if that's true, how can the small guys be expected to survive the pandemic? So this week on the Guelph Politicast, I talked to Peter Henderson about life at the Bookshelf Cinema before and hopefully after the pandemic. We also talk about the conversations he's been having with fellow managers of art house cinemas and their concerns about making it through quarantine and how these theaters are only as strong as the communities they've built. And we'll also discuss the regular sized issues facing art house theaters, whether they can coexist with streaming services, and whether being in quarantine for months might actually make people more likely to visit the cinema once those restrictions are lifted. I also asked Henderson, what would be playing right now at the Bookshelf if it were open? A little fantasy thinking, I suppose. So I caught up with Peter Henderson late last week by phone. Peter Henderson, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I guess, first of all, for people who may not know the vaunted history of the Bookshelf Cinema, there's been a long history, and I imagine, because you've been there for all of it, you've never encountered anything like this before.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Even, I guess, the blackout of, what was it, 2003, that lasted for a day or two, but certainly nothing like this, no.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about that, you know, how long that Bookshelf's been around and, you know, the cinema anyway, and how that all came to be, because I'm not sure people may be familiar with that history.
Okay, well, the Bookshelf itself started as a bookstore in 1973, moved to three different locations in downtown Guelph, the third one settling where we are now at 41 Quebec Street. And then in the early 80s, it changed its format to be Canada's first bookstore cafe, so a restaurant and a bookstore. And I started working there in the cafe in the mid 80s and in the late, yeah. And when was it? The fall of 1987, we started construction, building a second floor. The bookstore prior to that was a one-story building, and we built a second floor on top of the existing building, and that was where the Bookshelf Cinema got its start, and we opened in July of 1988.
And for context, because the construction on the new elevator was kind of just finished before everything kind of shut down, that was sort of the latest modification to that building, too, is that you just finished getting it all reorganized from that massive addition.
I know. I mean, the timing of the COVID pandemic is you know, not good for anybody in any regard.
Mm.
But yeah, for us to have just spent the last number of months with the construction of the elevator and altering the green room and changing our front of house setup for the cinema and kitchen setup. We were just getting underway with the new arrangement there when this started. So
yeah
unfortunate timing in that regard. Sure.
Well, let me just ask this to you bluntly then. Given everything that's happened, and you know, we're recording this on Thursday, the medical officer of health for the country has basically said, you know, this could be our new normal till the end of summer. So just matter-of-factly, can the Bookshelf Cinema make it through?
I don't know is the short, quick answer. I don't like to speculate, but this, unfortunately, the current COVID situation puts us into a situation of constant speculation.
Mm.
And it seems to be changing daily, weekly, daily. So I guess the short answer to that is I don't know. I mean, obviously, if the current distancing and other COVID social regulations are in place, well, there's no way we can't open. So,
right.
I mean, you know, we live in hope for the day when the situation improves to the point where we can start trying as a society to getting back to where we were prior to this. So I'm sorry, I don't think anyone has an answer. I'm talking to my colleagues in the biz, and we're all, you know, just sitting back with our fingers crossed, hoping that things will change and improve.
Right, because there has been a lot of reporting about the concerns about people who have art house cinemas. You're in a kind of a unique position where your cinema is attached to a larger business that are all kind of separate, but at the same time kind of symbiotic. Does that kind of change your dynamic as opposed to maybe someplace like the Review Cinema in Toronto, where it's a standalone cinema?
Yeah, and I'm talking to my friends in Waterloo and Ottawa and other people in Toronto as well.
Mm.
And lucky for our business is that we're also a bookstore.
Right.
And a bookstore that can do online book sales. And we've been lucky in that since we had to close down the physical operation of the building, we've still been able to fulfill online and phone-in book orders.
Mm-hmm.
And this point so far, we're still offering free delivery in town, in local delivery in Guelph. So that's something that's at least adding some cash flow to our business that, you know, some of my friends who have other theaters in the country, you know, aren't able to do that because they're just strictly a theater.
Right.
For them, it's not so good. Yeah.
I don't know how to ask, but, you know, the situation was difficult to begin with, right? That, you know, there were all these pressures on the cinemas, that, you know, you have streaming, you have the big chains that, you know, and we'll get into more of that friction in a sec, but this was kind of an uphill battle to begin with. Are you and your colleagues worried that maybe this is hastening the inevitable? Or that, you know, maybe you're losing that, that safety strip where, you know, you could have had the time to adapt more to how the marketplace is changing.
Yeah, I mean, we've all of us in the business have talked about this. I mean, it you'd be naively blind not to. I mean, the whole streaming thing has been growing exponentially, and now with this, it's just gone through the roof. But at the same time, you know, we're all aware of that.
Mm.
And it's funny because, especially as an independent, the few independents that are still left in the country, I think the one common thing is we all have a spirit, of facing challenges and going at them in whatever inventive way we can,
right,
to stay in business. And one of the common things about the other independents when we talk with each other is it's almost always comes back at some level to the community aspect of it.
Mm.
Most communities have a big multiplex if it's, you know, if it's a big enough town or city. But it's, you know, we as independent theaters or same similar with independent bookstores survive because the people in the community respect whatever that we can bring to the community that's different from the big box versions.
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, that said, it's always an uphill battle. We're always trying to be or have to be creative to define, and maintain our niche in the community. So we're used to that, you know, constantly trying to find inventive ways to survive. This one is this one's a big challenge.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big challenge for everybody. Restaurant business, restaurants and bars and other places where people gather socially. So, yeah, everyone, you know, movie business, in the service industry are asking ourselves, you know, how will it be when the restrictions are lifted?
You raise an interesting point because, you know, talking about restaurants, it's like, well, you could, you know, if there were no restaurants, you would just eat at home. And the counter argument, of course, for that, and when it comes to movies, is, you know, if there were no theaters, as pretty much there is now, well, you can just watch movies at home. It seems like the shift is, I mean, it's in so much is it about the product. People don't want to go to the movies to watch bad movies, but at the same time, people don't want to go to the movies just to watch a movie. There is an element of community and an element of atmosphere and an element of what else goes on at an establishment as opposed to just the movie.
Yeah, and whether it's a movie or it's a restaurant or a place to have a drink or it's socializing. It's you know, it's shared activity with other people. So I think when this lifts, changes, whatever, who knows how people will adapt to it, but on a certain level, you know, I think a lot of people just want to get out and socialize again, whether that's sharing a drink or a meal or a movie. You know, how fast they return to it, that's another question we're all confronting, but it's just one of the many questions that we're all confronting with no answers other than to speculate, you know, well, what do we do in this scenario or what do we do in that?
I did wonder that because I was doing one of my other shows and talking with one of my co-hosts there about, you know, what this looks like at the end in terms of the theatrical experience. A lot of people have obviously, understandably, the doom and gloom interpretation that, you know, people are streaming at home right now. All the films that studios are releasing direct-to-streaming films instead of waiting for the quarantine to lift. But at the same time, I wonder if people aren't going to want to go out. That if having had the bounty and having to have been at home for so long and experiencing movies in that very specific way, whether people will feel compelled to go back and try that theatrical experience again, even if they haven't been to a movie theater in a while.
Well, that's certainly my hope, and also the hope of any of my colleagues in the movie biz. And once again, you know, it's a wait and see scenario. Myself, I watch a lot of stuff at home, whether it's previewing films that we're going to be playing in the theater later, or you know, watching something on Netflix or on alternate sources. but I'm, you know, as soon as the option is available to get back out and watch a movie in the theater, I'm there. It's different. It really is different, you know. And yes, I have a vested interest, but since I was a kid, I've been going to the movie theater.
Yeah.
So it's just something to me that is part of the experience of watching a movie. Yes, you can do it at home in the, you know, the 21st century streaming versions that are available, but there's still the movie going experience for me is different.
Well, and I can think of
something I enjoy.
And I can think of a very direct example of that. Because I was I went to the Bookshelf on opening night for The Irishman, and it was a packed house.
Yeah.
It was a packed house for a movie that was going to come out on Netflix in 5 days.
And that was an interesting experiment. I was curious to see how it would play out.
Yeah.
Once again, I've been asked by colleagues and coworkers, you know, how are you dealing with this? How are you dealing with that? And I found myself over at least certainly the last year, is every month when I do a program, it seems like something's changed.
Mm.
There's a new challenge. This has gone popular. That has changed in the way we access things. And that the release of three Netflix films last fall were really a new thing for us. It was another experiment.
Mm.
And every program seemed to present new experiments. And I was pleased to see that we were able to draw people, and it was, you know, it was a sign of a number of people that agreed, like, you know, no, I've got to see this in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And it was a film made by Martin Scorsese, so,
yeah.
You know, he's always extolled the virtues of the movies and, you know, movie theaters. So it seemed appropriate that way, too, that it was his film.
Oh, absolutely. And it just impressed me all the more that it was something that was available free at home. Well, not necessarily free. Netflix subscription costs you, but in terms of being right at your fingertips at home, also a 3.5 hour movie that on a on a Friday night you could still pack the house for that, and it could have been the Scorsese factor for sure. But I do wonder, and I'm not a big fan of using, you know, terms like Guelphiness and this kind of thing, but The Bookshelf has this really solid community of supporters. Like, that cinema has survived. You know, there have been a couple of multiplexes in town that have come and gone. We've had, like, more, you know, I don't want to say advanced, but, you know, other new multiplexes come in with, like, state-of-the-art technology. And meanwhile, this simple cinema, not to make simple sound like a pejorative, but the simple setup you have at the Bookshelf endures, and I think that says a lot about your programming and obviously, but also for people's love of that specific experience at the Bookshelf.
Yeah, there's you know, in many ways too, we're sort of a neighborhood theater, or it's what it feels like. Not that there aren't people that, you know, we have people that travel from Dundas, Hillsburg, Fergus. So it's not just, you know, Guelph itself, although there are a lot of folks that just walk from their homes nearby.
Right.
So there's that, you know, the neighborhood element is, and community center is part of that. And once again, with the Bookshelf being a bookstore, movie theater, restaurant, bar, there are a number of different reasons to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that also helps add to the traffic of people that come to the cinema. They might be, you know, they might have bought a book there the week before and looked at our program and went, oh, The Irishman's playing next week, you know, or whatever.
Right.
And, hey, let's go see that. I want to see it before it comes out on Netflix.
Right.
Yeah.
You could spend the afternoon at the Bookshelf and not do the same thing twice.
I've spent many afternoons there. But no, you're right. You're right. That's a fun observation too, because I remember I've seen numerous times where, over the years, there was a while when the kids from the nearest high school would be hanging out after school, drinking coffee and doing homework or just hanging out. And, some years later, some of them got part-time jobs, and other years later, they're still coming back to shop at the Bookshelf, but they're bringing their kids, you know? So that's a very cool thing too, when you see sort of intergenerational activity going on where, you know, someone, and quite literally, you know, people that I knew when they were in high school are now coming in and they're pushing baby carriages and bringing in their kids and, you know, to the kids section of the bookstore going through stuff. So, yeah, that's cool, too.
Certainly reminds you of the passage of time.
Yes, that's true.
I want to talk about there were some challenges before this, and I know that I've gotten a lot of interactions with people talking about the schedule. Recently, you had a couple of films you had to preempt because of issues with the big movie chain here in Canada. Is that a relatively new issue that, you know, you're sort of, in that you've always felt the weight of the major chains. Are you feeling that weight a little bit more now?
Yes and no. Yes, in that the business has changed. The business keeps changing. It always does. Mm. And as a result of some of those changes, for example, at certain times there's less number of films out available at a given time.
Right.
Where, say, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, say if there's 20 films out in general release right now, 10 years ago, that would have been 35, 45. Mm. That's just, you know, one example of how it has changed. The no side of that yes and no answer is they've always been there. They've always exerted strong controls over access to product. And it's something that we just try to be agile and nimble in our programming. You learn the things that you just avoid, and you cultivate relations with the people that have alternate product to the things that you know you can't get.
Right.
The instances that you were mentioning of films that we had booked and got canceled were flukes, where in two cases, I had confirmations from the bookers that I booked the films with. Yes, you can have that film. That date will be good.
Mm.
And when that date rolled around, that film or those films were both still playing at the big box for a variety of reasons. They were playing at the big box theater because the big box theater had nothing new to open.
Right.
And they were holding while the film, they played longer than films normally do right now. So when we thought that was a safe date and got it confirmed, for a variety of reasons, it proved not to be a safe date.
Mm.
And rather than letting us play the film at the same time as the big box chain, you know, even after 3 months where, you know, at 3 months, they weren't grossing very much on those films. They were pretty low.
Right.
And if there were any decent new films coming out, they would have fallen off screen. But there were no decent new films. And so they exert their control. And rather than say, okay, yeah, we've been playing this for, you know, we're now in our 13th, 14th week, whatever it was. Yeah, we can, you know, go ahead, let the bookshelf play it. We'll both play at the same time. We'll just add one more screen.
Right.
They won't. They get very territorial and very strict in, you know, what they'll do and won't do. So, you know, they will say, oh, well, it's the distributor's decision to hold the film with us. And technically it is. But if they were to give the film to us, then the big box takes it off screen completely. So they can't.
Right.
They won't have any. There won't be shared revenue from two screens. And that's punitive towards the distributor. And they do that all the time. They strong arm to get their way. Look, if you want your film, you give us, you know, we're going to offer you every big box theater in the country or in the region. And if you want to say, no, I want Guelph, I want to share it with the bookshelf, they say, well, fine, then we won't play your film, period.
Right.
So they're like, to say that it's the distributor's choice is really, I won't say it's a lie, but it's certainly a manufacture of, what have you. They're manufacturing what they think is the truth.
Right.
Or what they want to put out there as the truth.
Right. And what it makes, you know, theaters like yours kind of like the odd person out, or maybe not the odd person out, but it's sort of puts you in, as sort of like the only movable force in this negotiation, because one of the films we're talking about, Knives Out, I remember that was unfortunately canceled. It's run at the Bookshelf, but it came out on Blu-ray the next week, because I remember buying the Blu-ray the next week.
I know. By the time we got to play it, it was March 13th, and we ended up closing on the 16th, and it came out on Blu-ray the week or two before.
Yeah.
And that was the joke, too, that I was having with others, is that if we got it pulled again, no, actually, it was even before that, I just called the distributor, and I said, you know, can you give us the film finally, or do I just go buy the Blu-ray and play it that way? Which is, you know, completely against the way we do business with the distributors.
Right.
But I was just trying to make the point of, come on, how can Cineplex prevent us from playing something that's, you know, everyone can watch it on Blu-ray? Like, it just turned the situation into the ridiculous. There's a number of theaters across the country that have been independent theaters that are gathering as a group to approach the Competition Bureau.
Right.
The anti-competition policies of the big box movie chain. And the recent example for them, we got lucky, was the film Parasite, which ended up sweeping the Oscars and being a huge, huge success.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of our fellow indie cinemas across the country couldn't get it.
Right.
Because Cineplex was playing it in that market. For us, locally, the big box doesn't usually play. Rarely do they play subtitled films.
Yeah.
So when we booked it, it was just part of the norm. It was a distributor that we deal with regularly, and we often get foreign films from them. So, you know, they know, well, we've got these films. They're subtitled. We play the Bookshelf. You know, we play all, you know, lots. I'd say 80% of their films, and. So when we got it, Cineplex, they won't play anything unless it's the first time.
Right.
If anyone else has touched that film, they won't touch it, which is pretty precious. But a lot of our independent cohorts were shut out. They couldn't get it. You know, major theaters in Vancouver and Edmonton, Calgary, major cities. If it opened. When it started to gain popularity, the big box chain jumped on it.
Right.
I don't know if there was... Typically, what could happen there is because so many of us book programs, so you're booking anywhere for a month, some even 2 months ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
You book a film, and then the big box chain hears that it's picking up, it's a big success, we want it everywhere, and they hassle the distributor, look, if you want it on our screens, you give it to us on all our screens, and the distributor goes back to the independents and say, I can't honor that date, we're going with the chain, which to me is just totally unethical, it's just like, that's total control, it's monopolistic control.
Right. It makes me wonder, though, After at the end of all this, obviously you want to think that maybe all our time in isolation might thaw our feelings and our actions, and that, you know, maybe there'd be a bit more feeling of a magnanimous on the part of everybody going forward. But I can't help
that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would, but I wonder if, you know, given all the musical chairs with release dates that's happening right now, whether that's pie in the sky.
Well, I can't believe that. Well, I could hope, but I'm not naive.
Right.
But beyond hope, I it's not in the business model of those corporations, that type of corporation that runs the big box movie chain, to be kind and sharing,
yeah,
or even ethical and hospitable. No, they are totally driven by feeding the shareholders.
Right,
that's the mandate, and that's the way their businesses work.
Mm-hmm.
But they take it to the nth degree, where they're strong arming on all kinds of things, like preventing a little theater in Guelph from playing Knives Out after 13, 14 weeks. I mean, that's ridiculous. And they prevent other theaters and other markets in different ways.
Right.
An old example would be, and it would be similar to Parasite, which we played. Luckily, we got it, and the distributor stuck with our date and didn't pull it and give it to the big box.
Mm-hmm.
Although they did eventually, the big box did eventually play it between one of our return engagements.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can't argue against sharing and not say, sure, you know,
right.
we played it a number of times and we had it engaged to come back again.
Mm-hmm.
So when they slotted it in between, I went, well, I can't really complain about that. I just wish it went the other way, both ways.
Right.
Where in the past, there have been occasions where, I'm going to go way back to a film called Pan's Labyrinth.
Uh-huh.
Spanish film by a guy, Guillermo del Toro. Yeah, he's done a couple little small films.
Yeah,
I saw the film at the festival in Toronto in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's about to get released around Christmas. I call the booker and I say, "We want that film, yeah." And he said, "Well, I got to check with the chain." He comes back and I guess mm-hmm. the chain just waffled at the time. Who's going to want to watch this Spanish subtitle film that, quite frankly, gets a little dark and gets a little weirdly violent at times, whatever.
Right.
And so between the time that we guarantee our date, our booking, the film opens and it goes through the roof. It's just like everyone's like, wow, what is this?
Mm.
And then the chain goes to the booker and says, okay, we want this film. We want it everywhere. And one of the everywheres they wanted was Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And the booker, bless his heart at the time, stood up to them. And he took so much flack from them.
Mm.
They threatened to pull off all kinds of other screens because he honored the date that we had set.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's the kind of thing that they do have done all the time. So for them to say, oh, it's the distributor's decision, is really, really playing with the truth of the situation,
mm-hmm.
which is they exert their control in many ways, all of it against a free market situation. They are, in that sense, they're acting, they're used their power to monopolize the rest of the market.
And as you said, that's going to get harder the fewer movies there are. And there are fewer movies. At least one's coming out on for theatrical exhibition.
Oh, yeah, like all of us, everyone in the business is wondering when theaters reopen, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
How many films that have already been made and put on the back burner are going to be available?
Mm-hmm.
And probably not enough to fill a 10 or 20 plex.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what will they do? In that situation, it gets pretty weird because usually we get the smaller films, some of them that they don't want for various reasons, whether they're subtitled or they don't think that they're commercially viable or they're a small-scale Canadian film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often the mainstay of our programming is foreign films, alternative titles. Who knows when the market reopens again?
Yeah.
If that's all the films that are out there, they take them all to fill their screens because there's nothing else.
Right.
Then if they prevent us from access then it's definitely monopoly that's harming our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's something that we're all talking about too. We don't know what's going to happen when theaters reopen.
Mm-hmm.
How many films will be finished and available that haven't already been streaming for months?
Right.
There's no film production right now, so there's
right.
There's a glut in the forthcoming films. I mean, boy, there's going to be a lot of overtime on movie sets and in production, post-production, once things get lifted.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I kind of want to end up on an upbeat note.
Good.
if you know, I want to play a little fantasy exhibition right now. If the bookshelf were open and receiving audiences right now, what were you kind of thinking about for April, or what had you had scheduled for April?
I got to say, in all honesty, April to June is one of the hardest times of the year for us. Mostly because of the way films get released, certainly around award season,
right,
where everything gets stacked in the last month or two of the year in order to have a fresh face on the showcase for award season. And that usually carries through to about usually March, sometimes April. But I was looking to put forward a group of Canadian films, number of them which were nominated for the Canadian Screen Awards that was scheduled for, I think, the last weekend of March.
Right.
So in the spring is typically a time when we do a showcase of Canadian films. I think would have been the 13th year we usually do well, it started out as Canada Film Week for us. That's what we called it. I did it in conjunction with The Princess in Waterloo.
Right.
And originally, I think The Gorge and Laura was part of it as well. And we'd showcase films, and usually we started at a week, and then we started spacing it out, so it would sort of run through a month program. So I was looking at a number of recent Canadian films, a number of them that premiered at the festival in Toronto last September. And there was also, there's some foreign films as usual that we were looking at as well. There was a couple indie films, one from England, another from the States, that I'm not sure their releases, got pulled once all the theaters got closed, and we're waiting to see if they just leave them on the shelf and it's something that is available to us theatrically when we reopen,
right,
or if they end up selling it to a streaming service. It's especially tough for the smaller films. They've put their sweat and blood and they've raised a small amount of money to get their film made, and it's something that they just might not be able to get back.
And it can be so reflexive for the distributors just to say, we're probably going to get buried when quarantine's lifted by, the Wonder Womans and the Ghostbusters and all that. So we'll just, sell it to Netflix and we'll make our money back. And
yeah. Well, and the other side of that, too, is all of those film companies, like the production companies that make the film, whether they're small or whether they're a big, Warner Brothers, Sony or whatever, they've got a lot of money invested in that film, whether it's a few hundred thousand for a little indie film, or a couple million, or larger budget films. All that money's been spent, and it's a debt that those companies have, and they're looking to release the film to make their money back and erase their debt and hopefully make some profit. How long can they sit on the debt of what they've spent to get the film made, right? And that's why a number of them are just saying, well, let's just sell it to a streaming source and get whatever we can back, because we can't afford to wait. Which is unfortunate. But we're going to end on an up note, though, right?
Well, how about this for an up note? What's your recommendation for, a good movie to watch while we're in quarantine?
Oh, gosh. I've been going through, well, this isn't a movie, it's in here, it's HBO. I've been going through The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
A series that I started years ago and never finished for a number of reasons, just, got busy. So I'm going back on that. I was going through some scary kind of movies, too, and I'm one on my list that I haven't gotten to yet, because I'm not sure I've got the stomach for the creepiness of it, is Babadook. Australian film. The trailer gave me the shivers. So I'm thinking, okay, well, one of these dark and stormy nights, I'll put that in to watch. Other than that, I haven't gotten back into some old classics too much yet. One of the ones on my list in front of me is a German film. I think it won the Oscar, actually, but it's a hard film. The Lives of Others.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic film about East Germany, Stasi police. And then I've got some kung fu, and I've always gone back to Bruce Lee. Yeah. I think we've also got Tampopo on the list.
Oh.
Film from early days. I think we played that in the late 80s, early 90s.
Right. That's Miyazaki, that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm still looking. I'm still streaming films in advance of their release, so I'm looking at stuff that hopefully will be available to us to play whenever that sunny and dark night, sunny day, dark night, when we can shut the lights and open the theater again. So I'm watching some films, hopefully for the future as well.
All right, perfect. Peter Henderson, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to that that dark night I can go back to the bookshelf to, and I know you're looking forward to it as well. It's your life's work after all, but thank you so much for your time today, and I hope to see you down on Quebec Street soon.
Thanks, Adam. I look forward to that too.
And once again, that was Peter Henderson, the manager of the Bookshelf Cinema. Yes, the bookshelf is still closed, and the government of Ontario announced Saturday that the state of emergency will continue until April 23rd. And after that, who knows what will happen. Of course, you can still order your books from the bookshelf, and you can place those orders at the store's website at bookshelf.ca. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics. It's the Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, you can go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you'll get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. There is, of course, the Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you soon. And until then, see you next time.